It's 7 o'clock. Welcome to City Council meeting for the City of Shore Acres. It is Monday, January the 9th, 2017. First order of business, 1.0, call to order, roll call.
Mayor Sanford.
Present.
Alderman Hoskins.
Present.
Alderman Bowles.
Present.
Alderman Snell.
Present.
Alderman McCowen.
Present.
Mayor Protem Jennings.
Present.
We have a call.
Okay, 2.0, pledge of allegiance. I pledge allegiance.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Honor.
I pledge allegiance to the United States. One state under God, one and indivisible.
Item 3.0, special presentation. 3.1, proclamation of appreciation recognizing City Administrator David Saul and Harris County Precinct 2, Commissioner Jack Moore. Alderman Jennings.
Yeah, this is a simple proclamation of appreciation. Let me just read it. Whereas it is primary function of local government to provide for the safety and welfare of its citizens, and whereas traffic safety affects all motorists and pedestrians that use streets, roads, and highways in and through the city of Shore Acres, and whereas lower speed limits have proven to reduce a greater margin of traffic safety. Now, therefore, I, David Jennings, Mayor Pro Tem of the City of Shore Acres, do hereby recognize the valuable and merit-worthy efforts of City Administrator David Stahl and Harris County Precinct 2 Commissioner Jack Mormon in their work to reduce the speed limit on Shore Acres Boulevard from 40 miles per hour to 35 miles per hour, thus providing improved traffic safety in the City of Shore Acres. And that's it.
Moving on to item 4.0, council reports and requests. 4.1, Mayor Sanford. 4.1.1, items of community interest. I don't have any. We're going to move on to 5.0, public hearing and public comment. 5.1, lower speed limit on Shore Acres Boulevard and golf carts. Neil Moyer.
I'm still Neil Moyer at 1118 North Country Club Drive. And notwithstanding the statements by Mayor Pro Tem Mr. Jennings, I'm not sure that anybody in the city or not were aware that the Precinct 2 was about to take their action on Shore Acres Boulevard, east of Highway 146 and east of Old 146. As I understand it, this action was communicated to the city by a couple of phone calls last Tuesday to the city administrator and the police chief. What's sort of mysterious is how this all came about, and even more mysterious is that, at least with limited conversation I've had with Precinct 2, they seem to be unaware of the primary consequence of this change in limit, and that is allowing golf carts to drive on Shore Acres Boulevard. State law prohibits golf carts from operating on roads with speed limits above 35 miles an hour. State law. It's 35 or less, golf carts can do it. Even though golf carts are not equipped with turn indicators, yes, they should have headlights, tail lights, but they cannot exceed 25 miles an hour. So now there is a closing speed, arguably, that will be there between golf carts doing their legal speed and motorists doing their legal speeds, or not, as the case may be. And this has come about in a somewhat mysterious process. I'm sure that no elected official in Shore Acres would have freelanced this issue and gone to Precinct 2 Commissioner approximately sometime in the third quarter of last year, 2016, since the engineering study that allegedly was performed would have taken 16 to 90 days. And if you roll back the calendar, you get to sometime in October or September when the request from an unnamed individual went to the Precinct 2 Commissioner's office. And of course, at the present time, no one has admitted that I'm seeking that request. As I understand, the original request was for 30 mile per hour to be put, but that the traffic engineering folks in the county could not come up with any justification for when the vote was 35. So, golf carts are allowed on that part of Shore Acres. I need to remind folks, though, that the whole 146, which is a state highway, state road, still has a speed limit of 40 miles an hour, which means that golf carts cannot traverse from one side of Shore Acres to the other on Shore Acres Boulevard, legally. I'm sure that some people will rev up their golf carts and somehow make it across, and nobody will be the wiser. I'm also curious that no one has raised any safety issues about the speed limit, 40 miles an hour on Shore Acres Boulevard, or at least I'm unaware of it. I don't know if the chief has reported on a history of accidents in the recent past. I've heard no report from the city administrator on the topic of safety on Shore Acres Boulevard. So this thing did come somewhat mysteriously, like I said, out of the blue, allegedly at a request from a single individual. I'm not even sure it was a resident of Shore Acres, though, I suppose. In any case, I would recommend, though, that you defer action on item 7.7, which the city administrator has called for recognizing a special speed zone on Shore Acres Boulevard. And maybe a request should go from the council to the precinct to commissioner, requesting them to give us a presentation on what motivated them to move ahead, how they did that, and how it came about that the city of Shore Acres became aware of this well after the decision was essentially made to come back. Thank you very much for your time and your consideration. And I think the rest of the committee would like to be made aware of how this all came about. Thank you.
Moving on to item 5.2, public comments. This is the opportunity for the public to address council or comment on items which appear on the agenda. Time is limited to 5 minutes per speaker. Comments are directed to the city council and dialogue with the audience is not permitted. Council members are prohibited by law from participating in discussion or deliberation of items not specifically identified on this agenda. We will start over here. Is there? No? Anybody over here? Anybody back there? Yeah.
I'm Vicki Ellis, 414 Bainwood. Item number 7.11, talking about the censoring of our Alderman Jennings and Bowles. I think it's a ridiculous thing to have on the agenda, a waste of our taxpayer time and money. That's all I have to say.
Well, you don't have anything down there to say? No?
Over here? Nope. Ginger Dempsey, 201 Meadow Lawn. There's a couple of things on here that disturb me. One is 7.5, back on the water bill thing. As long as the city's been in business, it looks like we would know that if somebody doesn't pay the bill, the water gets cut off. We spent money on legal fees discussing that, which is ridiculous. It's a law. I mean, if you don't pay your car note, they're going to repossess your car. You don't pay your water bills. And I don't care what day it gets cut off. If you didn't pay it, it gets cut off. If you have to do it out on the weekend, maybe you'll pay it next month. The other thing is I see that there is a 7.10 consideration to rescind anyone other than the mayor to be able to talk to legal. The mayor was elected to serve the city. She is not the queen of the city. And amen. This is the second time that the mayor has done a thing where she wants access to everything and control over everything. This, we have a council for that, and the mayor is not the person who needs to have control over everybody's office, everybody's systems. No business does it that way. And then this 7.11, the censoring thing. There's been plenty of things from almost everybody on this council that should be censored if we're going to play the censor game. But if you put two people on here, those people, by Robert's rules, can't vote. So then you've got the two people, so you've stacked the vote against them.
Anyone down here?
Yes. Mine is more of Virginia Chase, 615 East Forest. Mine's more of a question. I'm just don't know why, on 7.8, to elect the commission to need keys to the offices of city employees. Why is this even a question?
I don't understand why any official, an elected official, would need a key to a city or an office of the city employees. Y'all, to me, are a completely different entity from any paid city employee. And I don't understand why that should even be coming up as a question. And I think it should not even be a question coming up in the city.
Administrative report 6.0, 6.1, general activity report to administrative
results.
6.1, 2017 election update.
Okay, the election, the general election for the city of Shore Acres will be on Saturday, May 6th. We have 3 at-large council positions that will be on the ballot. First day to file to be on the ballot is January 18th. The last day is February 17th at 5 p.m. We also anticipate having 2 propositions on the ballot that day. One proposition is a reauthorization of our 0.25% street maintenance sales tax. We've had that for about 5 years, and every 5 years you need to reauthorize that. We're going to continue to do that. The other is the mayor's call for city manager form of government proposition to be placed on the ballot. And that's all I had on the elections.
6.1.2, Circle Park Playground Equipment Update.
Okay, the final pricing was approved and the purchase order issued to the manufacturer of playground equipment through HGAC on December 20th. That purchase includes the removal of the existing equipment and turnkey installation of new equipment in the fall zone. We're waiting now for the demolition and installation schedule. I expect to have that any time, hopefully by the next council meeting, as I report what our schedule is for getting that equipment in.
6.1.3, municipal court update.
We, as you know, we had signed an agreement and sent it over to LaPorte for LaPorte to move from here to LaPorte. We keep our same judge and prosecutor. We just have LaPorte doing the collection work and the courtroom work. However, we have hit a snag. The LaPorte city attorney has raised the issue of the additional court costs to them, specifically adding the part-time person that they need to do that work in their office to perform on our agreement had not been budgeted. And despite the offsetting revenue of our agreement, that employee position wasn't authorized, and our agreement does not create an emergency that would allow them to do a budget amendment to put that position in. Accordingly, the agreement was pulled from tonight's council meeting in LaPorte, where we had anticipated it to be approved. It's being modified, and the solution to that that's being proposed by the city of LaPorte is that we use our budget as it currently exists to employ a part-time person that we would assign to LaPorte. They would back that out of the dollar amount we have in the agreement. And that would solve the problem. They would be able to absorb the other costs within their existing budgets if we pick up that personnel cost. And so they are preparing an agreement to bring back for us to reconsider. So you'll see that come back on another agenda. We've been set to move municipal court to the court beginning February 1st. With the agreement changes, that's going to push likely to March 1st. In the meantime, we'll have court here next Thursday. And Ann, Annie, and I will continue to split the work of the municipal court clerk work on an ongoing daily basis. We're now starting our second week of doing that. And there's no court is set for February. So other than the additional 4 or 5 weeks of us covering extra bases, we should get back on track. And council can consider the agreement when the court brings that back to us. That's all I have on this report.
6.1.4, Social Impact Assistance Program, Miramar Erosion Grant Update.
This is the project we have to replace the riprap on Miramar. It was not a grant for construction. It was a grant for design, engineering, and permits. the design work had been completed some time ago. The engineering work had been completed. They were doing the drafting. We did get the Army Corps of Engineers permit, and there was some confusion on the General Land Office permit. There was an existing General Land Office easement, but it was not to the City of Shore Acres. It was to the Shore Acres Recreation Association. And we had both thought that that had covered the area where the pier was at, and it turns out at the time the GLO issued that easement and coastal lease to the Recreation Association that operates the pier, they did that from our north city limits all the way to the yacht club. And so because of that conflict, we have now told the GLO, as the owners of the abutting property, that we will assume that from end to end. Otherwise, we'd have to do two leases, leaving a third for the association. That's being reworked. Our grant expires on December 31st, 2016. However, we requested and were granted a 30-day extension past that date by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife. So we're now in that extension period. For the last 6 weeks, I've been working daily with either our grant administrator, project engineer, or the General Land Office, and they're hustling that up. Today, they completed the field work. It's going to Austin for review and approval, and we anticipate having our surface lease by the end of the month, and that's the last check box to check off on our grant. We are still within the grant budget, so there's no extra funds involved there, and also this will be a no-cost lease to the city. So there's no additional cost that will be involved with that lease. And that's all I have to report on the purple impact.
Okay. 6.2, monthly financial report for December.
Okay. Financial report review of the fall next meeting, but I did put some material in here to help catch you up. The general fund balance at the end of November was $199,028.51. The utility fund checking account, $99,504.37. Our tech school investment at the end of November, $410,539.92. As I've reported for the last 11 years, we have not touched any of our certificates of deposit. The maturity value is now at $249,741.50. In the packet this time is a report from our tax assessor collector. And you can see there the collection rate is. Currently, we're at 11% of the tax roll collected. Our sales tax revenue for November was $6,616.89 in general, and $1,654.22 for our road maintenance and sales tax, and that's the financial report.
Can you tell me where we're at on attorney's fees with our budget?
Where
we're at for the attorney's fees on our budget? We budgeted $20,000. Have we exceeded that already?
I believe that we have. I'll get you that number. Okay.
Thank you. I'm proud to report we have a slow December, a slow holiday period normally in the month of December. And actually, in November, we start looking for disturbances and theft calls, burglary top calls to go up. This year, that did not happen. I'm very thankful for that. Call your attention to structure fires. There's two listed there. Neither one of them were structure fires. They were outdoor burning where people were trying to burn leaves or something like that. There was one issued a citation for that because he had a large pile burning it. Other than that, we had nine house watches, which went up during the holidays, and it was pretty quiet. Good question, yes, sir?
Chief, on the lost, missing, recovered, abducted adults, juveniles, both found in what was the condition?
It was, by federal definition, he was 17, same person accounted for both of those calls, and he was returned both times. Actually, he was found safe and reported to the parents both times.
Okay.
Under a child in Texas, 17 is considered an adult except for runaway type things. And at 17, they still have to be listed in TCIC and CIC. So we continue to carry that under that row.
Okay.
I have a question. You had told me that we didn't have a policy for missing and endangered children. Did you get a chance to look at the two that I sent you, one from the Harris County Sheriff's Department, the other one from NCIC?
I did.
Do you have any recommendation on one of those, or do you like one over the other?
I think the policies we have in place already, even though they're not specifically called, a runaway policy suffice, and I'm prepared tonight to get three policies that I think cover it.
Okay. Moving on to 6.4, Monthly Public Works Department report. What's your response?
Good evening. The written report is in your packet. I would note that we were very, very pleased to have very few water breaks during the holidays and during the cold weather. There was only one water main leak and two service lines for the entire month. And we're happy for that. That's all I got.
I got a question. Did you find out anything on Shady Lawn?
Yes, sir. There was, we had a sewer backup in a small main Shady Lawn, 600 block, mm-hmm. and it was wet wipes that were in the pipe. We did have it jetted. There was no sign of any dirt, sand, clay, or other material that would indicate we have a problem with the pipe.
What about Westview last
West
weekend?
Materials.
Anything about Westview? Was that just because of all the rain?
I didn't get a report on the
okay.
Westview. Right. I understand it was rectified, but I didn't.
Okay.
Did you get a report on that?
Okay, moving on to 7.0. This is 7.1, consideration and approval of invoices. Call. Sorry. Do we have a motion?
I make a motion to consider and approve all invoices.
Do we have a second? Do we have a second? It dies for lack of a second. Moving on to 7.2, consideration and action to approve resolution 2017-222, appointing the clerk of the Short Ridge Municipal Court and appointing deputy municipal court clerk, Mr. Stahl.
Yes, in your packet is this resolution. This restates our current court clerks, and it also adds those who will be working on the City of Short Acres court business, the City of LaPorte. That will start this Thursday. LaPorte will send over someone to again participate with our municipal court. we'll authorize them, and it will be in place when we get our agreement done.
Madam Mayor, before entertaining a motion, may I ask Mr. Stahl a question?
Yes.
Mr. Stahl, based on the information given to us with the hiccup, is this putting the cart before the horse? Is this something that could wait until the 23rd, until everything is clarified as far as how this transition is going to occur with LaPorte?
I don't believe so. LaPorte, our agreement, the original agreement goes back to January 1st. They have begun doing work on court business. That's going to all slide a month. They've been coming over here and working on our court records so that they can get up to speed and on our software. Like I said, they'll be here Thursday in court, but they can't take any of the payments even here or conduct any of the business or sign any of the documents without being a court clerk. They do not have to be a paid employee. We could have volunteer court clerks. It just requires that they be officially appointed.
Okay.
So this part-time person that we're going to be floating, is that person listed in, within this resolution?
It is not. It is, we anticipate that to be a person that LaPorte had queued up to hire. They've already done posting, advertising, interviewing, and they selected the person. And when they went to do the final on that, that's when the city attorney and LaPorte stopped the process. And so what the agreement will be is that the court administrator who's in charge of operating the court will be responsible for doing the selection process, which has already occurred. And as soon as we get an agreement in place, then they'll hire that individual. And then we'll put them on payroll here. But they will be assigned in the agreement, as they've described to me, that they're going to write it, as their supervisor will be the court administrator of the court.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so do we have a motion?
Yeah, I'll make a motion to approve resolution number 2017-222, a resolution of the City Council of the City of Shore Acres appointing a clerk of the municipal court and deputy clerks of the municipal court, making various findings and provisions relating to the subject, finding compliance with the open meetings law, and providing an effective date hereof.
Do you have a second?
I'll second.
So we have a motion to approve resolution 2017-222, appointing the clerk of the Shore Acres Municipal Court and appointing deputy municipal court clerk, brought by Alderman Jennings, seconded by Alderman Bowles. Do we want to discuss this?
I have one more question, Mr. Saul. If we pass this now, and let's say that something totally comes undone with reports,
right,
where does that put the city?
We just do another resolution.
Okay, so this is not a big hindrance.
No.
All right, thank you. Okay.
Anybody else? All those in favor?
Aye.
That passes unanimously.
Mayor Sandiford, make a motion to reconsider item 7.1.
I'll second.
Okay. So we're going to move back to 7.1. We have a motion brought by Alderman Jennings, seconded by Bowles.
I'm going to request that the motion be divided.
Okay, so we're going to, how do you want it divided?
I'd like to divide it so that all invoices except those invoices from Greg and Greg be one motion, and the invoices from Greg and Greg be a second motion.
Okay, so we have a motion. We have a request. We have a motion to consider and approve all invoices except for the invoices for Greg and Greg. And we have a second by Bowles. Original motion was brought by Jennings. All those in favor?
All right.
No. Mm-hmm. I didn't second that. I said I didn't second.
You seconded for the approval of the invoices.
Correct.
He divided it.
Correct. All right.
Yeah. So all those in favor of paying all of our invoices except for Greg and Greg?
You're not going to vote on dividing?
No.
No, it's not a motion. It's a request.
It's not a motion. Right. It's a request. It's divisible.
So then we'll go back to the motion. We'll do a motion to approve the attorney's bills after we do this one. They're just going to be separated. So all those in favor of paying all of our invoices except for the attorneys. All right. All those against. Are y'all abstaining? Is Jennings?
I said aye.
You said aye? You say aye? Alderman Bowles, you have an aye? No? Okay. Are you abstaining?
I will abstain.
Okay. So it is two. It's four. Okay, so we have Alderman Jennings, Alderman McCown, Alderwoman Schnell, and Alderwoman Hoskins voting in favor of paying all invoices except for the attorneys. And we have Alderman Bowles abstaining. Do we have a motion to approve the invoice for Greg and Greg?
Well, there's already a motion.
Do we have a second?
No, it's already divided. There's
just
already
have a vote.
Okay, so we're just going to vote on it?
Well, we can discuss it.
You don't want to just, okay, let's discuss it. Sorry, it's going to throw me off a little bit. So we're discussing on a motion to approve the invoice to pay Greg and Greg.
Correct.
All right.
If I may have the floor.
Sure, you are.
The issue I have with it is that, as Mr. Stoll stated, we've already gone over budget. And
Mayor Sanford, I'm going to step out for just a
minute. You're out of order. Okay.
No, I'm going to be out of order if I don't
say that. No.
Well,
we can
wait
on.
Oh. Yeah,
we'll wait. We'll wait.
Thank you.
We want to be out of order. Right. That would be bad. Approving and paying any kind of bills or invoices unless we've properly budgeted for those invoices. And we have not done so. So the only way we should be paying this bill or even incurring additional expenses is to do a budget amendment. And so I can't vote in favor in good conscience of paying a bill when we haven't properly budgeted for it. Aside from the issues that I have with the reasons why we're over budget, I have no intention of voting for the bill.
Can we start with Jennings? Alderman Jennings?
I have no comment on that.
Snow?
I agree. If we're going to hold everybody to the same standard as far as budget amendments, I mean, that's why we have a budget.
Right.
And if we're going over, we need to take appropriate actions to either have the funding to pay for it or to curb whatever is causing the occurrence of.
Right. Okay, so all those in favor of paying the attorney's invoice?
Aye.
Aye.
All those against?
Nay.
McKellar, you could have voted?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, so it passes 3-2. Jennings, McCown, and Gold in favor. Schnell and Hoskins against. How does that work, Mr. Saul, if it's not in our budget? And we haven't done the budget amendment.
Due by the department total. We often have line items that go over budget.
So if you budget them for line items, it's not department total.
Pardon?
It's not. We don't do, it's not per the department, it's the line item. We budgeted $20,000 for legal expenses, right?
That's correct.
So if we've exceeded that, we need to do a budget amendment?
You don't have to do a budget amendment. You have to do a budget amendment if you're going to exceed the entire budget. By practice, we've done it by department. So, for example, often line items will run over, for example, vehicle repairs. And the department head is held responsible for keeping other costs down in the department, so the department total does not exceed what is in the budget.
I don't agree with that. I believe it's per line item, but it is passed, and we will move on to 7.3. Consideration and action to approve resolution number 2017-223 requiring the Shores Police Department to adopt policies and procedures for reports of missing and abducted children consistent with the model law enforcement policy and procedures developed by the National Center for Missing and Exploiting Children. This was brought by me, and do we have a motion?
I'd like to hear from Chief Harrison before we do a motion on either of.
Either one,
okay.
7-4, if he doesn't mind, Chief Harrison. I don't mind.
Yeah, okay,
please. You have questions, or would you just like
for
me to speak?
Do we currently have a policy?
We don't have a specific policy for the investigation of runaway children. What we have are several policies that I think cover. We've got a policy for investigating juveniles. We have a policy for crime scene search. We have policies that just throughout them. And you have to understand that a couple of years ago, we adopted the Texas Police Chief's best practices. It's the same thing LaPorte uses. So throughout those policies, I believe we do cover it. Not only that, but the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children is an excellent organization. I went to Tucson, Arizona many years ago and sat through a 40-hour course with them. Have nothing against their policies, but when people talk about policies being for any size department, I don't think they're thinking about the six-man department. I think when they think about a small department, they think about a 30-man department. I don't have a criminal warrants division. I don't have special investigators. I don't have juvenile officers. I don't have crime scene technicians. I don't have any of that. And these policies refer continually to referrals and investigations. And in our small city, we utilize a patrol officer for everything. When we have a runaway or we have some type of missing person, that will come to me, no doubt about it. We also have used these. These are investigative checklists for first responders. If the officers have that, they go through. It's two pages. An investigative checklist for law enforcement when helping unsupervised and runaway children. Investigative checklist for law enforcement when responding to missing children with special needs. And then we have one that we hand out to families. So I think that with what we already have, to develop a special policy just for that would just be, one more policy in a policy book that's already 2 inches thick. I think we have it covered, what we already have.
Is there anybody else?
What would be, if we were to adopt either one of these, I mean, I realize like Harris County Sheriff's, you're correct, and you do see what you're talking about, notifying certain departments. But let's say hypothetically, what would change in our procedures that's different?
I don't think I understand.
What I want to know is, let's say hypothetically, we just adopt this very first one. We say, okay, yeah, we want you to do the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. How would our policies, as they're written today, differ?
So I have to put up a slideshow and show you the differences. The things that matter, a lot of the things that matter are already mandated. They have to be done anyway.
Okay.
For instance, the notification in the TCIC, NCIC, which is the Texas Criminal Information Center, the National Criminal Information Center, that has to be done within 2 hours. One of the things that one of the model policies does is it basically prohibits the officer from looking for the child on the way to the scene. It says you can't check city parks, you can't do anything before you go to the scene. 80% of our runaway children are found on the way to the scene. It's a small city, we check the parks, and we get there very quickly. But we don't have a lot of runaways. We honestly don't. Yes, sir.
Tim Miller with Texas Echo Service. Does he recommend any of these? I mean, what do you know what he may or may not recommend, or any kind of has he given any guidance or any idea of what he would recommend?
I don't know that he's ever seen our policy. I know that when I've worked with him in the past, he thought our investigations have been adequate. In fact, he's made the comment, I think, in this room that we went above and beyond what even larger agencies would do on occasion.
And how many, about 3,000 deputies with Harris County?
Approximately.
Well, we've got 6. So that policy may or may not transfer over. We may have some stuff that gets overlooked or...
Well, it certainly wouldn't be verbatim. Any policy that was adopted had to be adopted to fit our small agency. We have one officer on at a time. And I think about a child coming home from school or maybe not returning home from school. If it's late in the evening, there's a great possibility, or at night or on the weekend, there's going to be one officer on. So he becomes the reporting officer, the investigating officer, and then we just don't have the luxury of more people.
Okay.
We are quick to call LaPorte. One of the things that the model policy for National Center of Missing Children encourages you to get other agencies involved, being dispatched by LaPorte. We often have their guys on a lot of calls that are priority type calls. We had a burglary in progress today. We had 2 of them show up almost 30 seconds behind me, and I was there in 30 seconds. Missing children, you can bet they do the same thing.
There's a couple of things on here that, one, the Sheriff's Department does is they report within the 2 hours. That's, federal law. That's something that we should be doing. And then another one is when you enter them into NIC, you get a number for them. But The Harrisonian Sheriff's Department, part of their policy is to search the immediate area immediately. Let me find that part of it.
I'm familiar with that. I remember reading it. When they have an officer dispatched to the scene, they have multiple other units to go, you know, they can go to, and while the ones at location taking the report, others are automatically searching the parks and you know, the places that you'd normally look for somebody that may be a runaway hiding.
Yeah, like the immediate areas of their home and things like that.
Sure.
And they report them to NCIC. They also get a medical release to find out if they have any mental issues, because whether they have mental issues also determines whether or not they're considered a runaway versus a missing child.
Well, there's different classifications by definition of, you know, whether a child is in danger or not. There are certain things that could constitute a higher priority call, and we have that.
We do have those.
Sure.
Okay. Well, whenever I had emailed you, I'd asked you if we had any policies for missing and endangered children, and you said we didn't. So that's why I was trying to make sure that we didn't have another issue like we had with Abby. I know that she was tagged as a runaway, but she wasn't. Ended up finding her within the immediate area, and she had some mental issues and was on medication. So I just wanted to try to protect the children from anything like that.
When you call me, you ask me if we had a runaway policy, and we don't have a runaway policy. We have several policies that cover that. And right. Abigail English was a runaway.
What I said she was for missing and endangered children. And how they're classified.
We do not have a policy by itself. A specific policy as that question is asked. We have several policies that tie everything together. Instead of looking at a specific policy, you can look at juvenile investigations that cover a lot of it. Crime scene search goes back and covers some of the stuff that's in those other model policies. They just choose to bring everything together. And under Texas Police Chief's best practices, for some reason, they lay it out different.
But inside that, can you email me a copy of that just so that I can look at it?
Email you what, ma'am?
The chief, what did you call it? The chief of police's practice? And
you have our policy book, correct?
Yes, yeah, upstairs.
It's in that? Yes, ma'am. The entire book is taken from Texas Police Chief's best practices.
So if I could just use a quick analogy. So it's kind of like what you're saying is you've got two checking accounts, and one of them has $50 and the other has $50. You really have $100
total.
So you're saying that the multiple separate policies, if you combine them all together, instead of having it in one little pamphlet, separate areas, like separate chapters?
I guess you could simplify it like that. It's, you know, there's six ways to get somewhere. We're choosing this way.
Okay. Excellent.
We take missing children and runaway children very seriously. We don't treat runaways as a crime. We normally know that child is trouble, or he or she wouldn't run away to begin with. We give it our utmost attention, as most as we can in this city. We continue to follow up as we have in the past. We followed up leads in Brenham in the past. That doesn't mean we had an officer that went to Brenham. It means we called Brenham and had them follow up. But we have always taken those serious, and we'll continue to take anybody that's missing serious from our city.
Must be a federal law that we follow too, right? So.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so, okay. So 7.3. Do we want to move on to 7.3, past 7.3 to 7.4, or do we want to continue? Do we want to discuss and vote on it?
Do we have a motion?
We don't
have a motion.
Yeah, what we've been doing is criticizing the chief. I'm sorry you had to listen to all that crap.
That's what I do.
Nobody's criticizing anybody. Okay, so 7.3, consideration action to approve resolution number 2017-223 requiring the Sheriff's Police Department to adopt policies and procedures to report missing and abducted children consistent with the model law enforcement policies and procedures developed by the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Do we have a motion? So dies for lack of a motion. Moving on to 7.4. Consideration and action to approve resolution number 2017-225 requiring the Sheriff's Police Department to adopt policies and procedures for reports of missing persons and runaways consistent with the policies and procedures adopted by the Harris County Sheriff's Office. We have a motion. dice for lack of motion. Moving on to 7.5, consideration and approval of ordinance number 2017-240, amending Troy Acres City Code, adding section 66-182, disallowing separate payments, amending section 66-187, discontinuation of service, and adding section 66-188, refusal of service polls.
I make a motion to consider and approve ordinance number 2017-240, amending Troy Acres City Code, adding section 66-182, disallowing separate payments, amending section 66-187, discontinuation of service, and adding section 66-188, refusal of service.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, so we have a motion to approve ordinance number 2017-240, brought by Alderman Bowles, seconded by McCown. Good discussion.
Looking over our numbers, you know, we always have budget issues. We have amendments that we have to do our budget, that sort of thing. And looking over the numbers of what we get from utilities, this isn't about being able to cut anybody's water or anything like this. This is about how we collect. Right now, we can currently collect by the time that somebody pays their bill. They have 45 days from the time they receive their initial before they get a disconnect. We have 45 days before we collect the money. So if you go and you look at our arrears, that's the money that's sitting out there that we're not collecting. We can have $3,000, $4,000 a month of money that we're not getting. We don't collect interest on it. It's sitting out there. If somebody moves, let's say they move out of the city, don't pay their bill, walk on. Where does that money come from? Everybody in the city. We have to divvy that. This way, it gives us a little more leeway to be able to collect the money. If you have your water disconnected, if you owe a past balance, you're going to have to take break current to be able to pay your bill to get your water back on. And you carry it from month to month. We're modeling this after City LaPorte. City LaPorte does it the same way. The wording's the exact same as LaPorte's. Another issue, if somebody moves from one side of the city to the other, they owe money at one address and move to the other side, they can get service over there because it's not the same address. This way, they're going to have to pay it to be able to go to another place to get another one. Or if a property owner owns two rent houses and they owe money on that account, it's got to be paid before a renter can come in and have it. It's got to be paid current before they can have water. This is also going to kind of leeway if there's somebody else in the house. If I've got somebody living with me and, hey, my water got cut off, and we've got somebody else that's living there, we put it under their name, then it becomes, well, money's still owed, but we still got our water on. And this is just to kind of clear it up. 45 days is a little much. We're going to change it from 45 to 25. We have budget issues here. Alderman Hoskins talked about it. We need to quit having our money sitting out there. Let's get our bills paid. Let's get everything back. Let's collect our money on time and move on. You know, it's just that simple. 45 days is a little much. We're not a corporation. We don't get net 90, net 45, or anything like that. We need to pay our bills. And we have to pay for the water when it comes in. So let's just change it to where we can have it done a little quicker. So.
Anybody else? Start with Jennings.
All for it.
Kim?
For it.
No?
I just have a couple of questions. I mean, because I know that Texas Utilities Commission has, for example, in their disconnect, whether it be your water, your gas, your electricity, you know, there's a consumer bill of rights, and we don't fall under that umbrella because we're a municipality. And for example, I don't know what would be in the water, but we could just have people lose their ever-loving minds and decide we wanted to charge citizens $1,000 a gallon for water. We don't get any protections because we have no bill of rights. And that kind of concerns me. I hope you can understand that too. Is that I would like to see the city maybe look into adopting some of their bill of rights. I mean, some of it's not applicable to a city our size. I mean, it would just be, you know, nonsense. But, I mean, I agree 45 days is way long enough. But the Texas Utility Commission, if you look through their bill of rights, it makes good sense, and it allows the residents, citizens, to have some recourse. The only way anyone can have recourse as far as Troy Acres water as it sits right now, because we're a municipality, is that you would have to live outside of the city limits of Troy Acres and be buying the water from the city. Then you fall under that umbrella. Well, that's not applicable to anyone here. But that is just something I wanted to bring up, food for thought, since we're talking water.
One other thing I did forget to mention. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
something else is keep preventing somebody to come in and go, hey, I'm going to put $50 towards my water, make sure my water's not cut off, and catch me next month for the water. You're not going to build out your garbage. You can't divide it up. You pay it, you pay it. Your water bill covers your trash and your sewage and all that, so it's all under one. So it's not, you can't divvy it and decide where you're going to put it. It all covers it all. So not that it's ever been done. It's just a little added protection just in case.
This would have been an excellent, excellent ordinance for us to discuss on the bulletin board system. So we'd have ample time. I mean, this is really I only looked at it for a few days. Would have been a classic example. Unfortunately, that was not posted on there. I wish you'd have posted it on there. We could have had a lot more discussion to be able to read it. I think this is something we should consider. I'm all in favor of considering it, but I think we should perhaps take one more meeting and discuss this on the next meeting. So I move that this motion be postponed until the next meeting. Coming up, when is it? January 23rd?
This is today, the night.
I move that this motion be postponed until the, as the first agenda item of business, item of business for the meeting of January 23rd.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those against?
Nay.
Nay.
Okay. So we have a motion to... Oh, yes. A motion to approve ordinance number 2017-240, brought by Alderman Bowl, seconded by McCown. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those against? Nay. Okay, so it passes. McCown, Jennings, and Bowl were the ayes. Alderman Schnell was the nays, and Hoffman's abstained. Moving on to 7.6, consideration and approval of ordinance number 2017-241, amending the general fund and utility fund operating budget for fiscal year 2016-2017. That was brought by me. Do we have a motion?
I'll make the motion to 7.6 to approve ordinance 2017-241, amending the general fund and utility fund operating budget for fiscal year 2016-2017.
Do we have a second? 1 second. Any discussion?
I have a question. Why do we need to do this? Isn't this all under one department yet? It's under one department. Can we just move
on? Said.
Why is this necessary? That's a question for Mr. Stoll.
Can you answer, Mr. Stone?
Sure.
Because we specifically excluded this when we did the budget. We explicitly limited the budget to $540 for the mayor's cell phone.
Well, we also explicitly set the attorney fees at $20,000. That was explicit.
Let me give another example. For example, capital outlays, we list what we're purchasing. They say two radar units and a one police car. And the money is budgeted there. That just because the money is budgeted there, that does not give police chief the latitude to decide that instead of those things, he wants to go buy a mannequin to shoot with a taser. If the cost of the radar was more than what was budgeted, or the cost of the car came in above budget, which has happened, then that would be an expenditure that would be approved.
I don't see the difference between our attorney fees and those.
Attorney fees are attorney fees, and we've not been billed for anything that's not an attorney.
But this was prior to the new budget, prior to y'all putting it in there that it was $540 just for cell phone bills.
Okay, I see what your point is. Okay. The way it was written. I got it.
Okay.
Thank you.
So we're going to have discussion. Do we want to start at one end, Alderman Jennings?
Sure, I'll start. I'm not going to vote for removing $2,000 from emergency management and giving it to those of us on council that want to go stay in hotels and have a little fun on the side. Thank you.
Okay.
town?
From what I remember on the budget, we had very little or no money for the mayor and city council's expenses. And back in September, there was a conference that was booked, and part of the money from that conference was paid out of last year's budget. Our budget had not been passed by October the 1st and was not passed almost 10 days into the month of October. Because of the fact that we tried to have more meetings that didn't work, Alderman Jennings also had a little buffer in the budget where we could have had some extra money if we needed it. That didn't pass. So after October the 1st, when the bills did come in for the conference, if it had been put into the budget and passed, I would have no problems with it. It was not passed. It was not put in the budget. And because of the fact that, as usual, this council doesn't get along all the time, we're in the position where we are again that there's no money. So as it stands right now, I can't see any of this money being transferred to our account whatsoever. With that being said, I know that each mayor that's been mayors recently have their own protocol and the way they do things. Mayor Sanford does it her way. I also know for a fact, as I'm sitting here, that Rick Moses, any time that he made any type of conference, any kind of place where he represented the city, he would pay for it, and he never turned in a bill back to the city because he thought that was part of his civic duty as being the mayor. So, go ahead.
Well, I can also tell you, as I sit here, that every time David Stahl goes to a conference, that he bills the city. And that's in the invoice this year. Hang on now. So, but, you know, if I'm recollecting correctly, Alderman Jennings asked for a budget amendment to cover the other expenses from the conference that the mayor attended. And apparently that's what she did, fulfilling her request. That's all I have.
I don't have anything.
It sounds like we need to withdraw from HGAC. We can't afford to attend a single meeting. And that is the group that gives grants. We may as well resign our membership. We have no money for it. That's what everybody's saying.
So, who is the rep?
I am the rep, and I'm resigning as of today. Would you like to be the rep?
Sure. I can pay my own way.
Go for it.
I would like to bring attention to the last budget that Mayor Moses was in. It was $3,000 allowed for mayor and council expenses, and they used over $2,600 of the $3,000. So what Alder and the council said isn't necessarily true. But that being said, do you guys want to vote?
Yes.
So we have a...
I believe there's a motion and a second. We need to vote.
We have a motion to approve ordinance number 2017-241, amending the general fund and utility fund operating budget for fiscal year 2016-2017. The motion was brought by Hoskins, seconded by Schnell. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those against?
Aye.
Okay. It fails. Those in favor were Hoskins and Schnell. Those against were McCown, Bowles, and Jennings. Moving on to 7.7, consideration and approval of ordinance number 2017-242, amending Shorester City Code 62-126, providing for special speed zones upon certain streets and highways or parts thereof within the city of Shorester, brought by David Stahl.
Ordinance 242 brings us to match what Harris County has done in changing the speed limit from 40 to 35 on Shorester Boulevard, between the intersection of West Country Club and Shorester Boulevard and Spur 501.
I make motion to approve ordinance number 2017-242, an ordinance amending Shorester City Code section 62-126, providing for special speed zones upon certain streets and highways or parts thereof within the corporate limits of the city of Shorester, Texas, providing severability clause, providing for the publication of the caption hereof, making various findings and provisions related to the subject, finding compliance with the open meetings law, and providing an effective date hereof.
I'll second.
Okay, so we have a motion to approve ordinance number 2017-242, brought by Jennings, seconded by Bowles. Any discussion? We'll start with Jennings.
I think that anyone that does understand why the county did this doesn't live on Stryker Boulevard between Broadway and West Country Club. And I know that the citizens there complained loud and long and hard for a long time, and the county did something about it. And this just simply makes the Shoreacre city laws in compliance with the county law.
McCown?
I'm good.
Michelle?
This, because of concerns about golf carts have been raised, the city code, that took us, what, 2 years to get done, as it states, will allow you to cross Old 146 or East Forest right there. You can cross it, and then if you need to do a little U-turn, because there's no way to get around the city, you can go around the bridge there at Bayou, and that is allowed in the city code. And I think it's a great thing that it's 35.
Cole?
I'm okay with the 35. I do think we'll eventually have to address the golf carts on the main thoroughfare. So, but
I just have a question. Are bicycles allowed to ride down that road?
No.
I mean, even under the old speed limit, were we allowed to have bicycles riding on it?
Yes, and it is over 40.
Yeah.
That's my only question.
I know there's been a lot of complaints on the speeding on Shoreacre Boulevard. When this was brought to my attention, I was asked if there were any concerns, and my main concern were the golf cart, kind of a double-edged sword. But I guess we're going to vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Passes unanimously. Moving on to 7.8, discussion. Elected officials need keys to city employee offices. Jennings.
Yeah, the reason I put this on here, just to have a discussion. On New Year's Eve, the mayor sent City Administrator David Stahl an email. I'll refrain from describing it. An email demanding a key to his office, or she was going to change the locks. That was on New Year's Eve. And then that prompted, I guess, Mr. Bowles to contact the city attorney for an interpretation whether he had to do that or not. Mr. Stahl eventually, I believe, if I recall correctly, Mr. Stahl said that he had not been asked for a key in the past. But the bigger question, I guess, is just when's the nastiness going to stop, and why does anyone need a key to Mr. Stahl's office?
I'll answer that. Because it was a proclamation that I was signing to put a city manager form of government on, and this was in the email, on this coming up election on the ballot, and I slid it underneath his door, and I never realized I didn't have a key to his office because I've never attempted to get into his office until that day, and I could not get back in to make a copy to, you know, confirm that I had signed it within the time that I was supposed to sign it. But, you know, I understand that there's a lot of animosity on council, and that, you know, some of the people that didn't support me don't like me. They don't think that I should have access. Regardless of that, I'm the CEO of the city. And most businesses, there is a CEO, and they do have keys.
No.
Yes,
no,
they do.
No, they do not.
No, they do.
No, they do not. I work for Fortune 500. And
you're at a border. You're at a border. I have this floor right now. When I get done, you can talk, okay? I've talked to several different mayors, and, you know, those mayors' position is that the city administrator works for the city and for the CEO, not the other way around. Anytime that I have a question or that I want something, such as providing keys to City Hall for all of council, which is something that I did when I was first elected, David Stahl fought me on that. You know, I think that if we could have some executive sessions, I don't think that it's appropriate that we use our city attorney and we use our tax dollars to constantly fight me. If you guys don't like a decision that I made, then we can have executive sessions. I've tried to call executive sessions in the past. I've been scolded for it, emails to all of council saying that it was stupid. You know,
I don't get it. All we have to do is go behind closed doors and have the discussions with the attorneys if that's what you want to do. But every council member being able to just to contact the city attorney whenever they want, it is running our bills up. I personally hardly ever contact the city attorney. It's usually Alderman Bowles or David Stahl. It's $60,000 we spent last year. $60,000 was thrown attorney's fees for because of we can't seem to get along. I have the floor. You're out of order. Both of you guys are. I'm going to finish. It is about the keys. It is about the keys, and I needed to get into the office so that I could get the proclamation. But what happened was it turned into running up our attorney bills. So, you know, it kind of ties into the other. But I'm done. That's fine. I just wanted to get that out there.
Well, why did you threaten the doors of locks? I mean,
don't
pretend this is something that it isn't. I mean, you sent him a nasty email on New Year's Eve demanding a key to his office or you were going to change the locks. So we don't need to go into executive session. Let's just talk about it.
I contacted the city attorney because your tone in the email contacted the city attorney because it wasn't a lawful order, and I've worked for large corporations. CEOs do not have the keys to everything, regardless of what anybody thinks. Small companies maybe, but large corporations do not. They don't have access. They don't have access to the janitor's closets. That doesn't mean that they need to get in there. If they need to get in, they ask. There's personnel records that are inside his office. There's files in there that deal with our city business. There's files in there that you have been denied access to our ordinances. There's computer software that we are not allowed as council to have access to. And there's no reason to go into somebody's office. If you need something, you can get it during business time, business hours, and that's it. And if you can't get it then, wait till he's there.
Well, we were under a deadline, and we were closed January 1st. We were closed Friday, so there was no way to get the proclamation in or proof that I'd signed it in time without having a key to the office. You know, I've never attempted to get into this office. I think you've misinterpreted what I have access to and what I don't. You know, you guys haven't given me password to the books, but that's fine. But as the CEO of the budget office, I'm responsible for the day-to-day activities of the city, as well as apprising city council of different recommendations with regards to personnel and things like that. So, you know, but all this stuff is going to get worked out down the line because there's probably going to be some other people coming in to settle some of this stuff since we can't seem to get along.
Sound like a threat?
No, it's...
Okay, so call for orders of the day.
Okay, so moving on to 7.9, consideration and approval of ordinance number 2017-243, retaining a city online message board in accordance with Texas Government Code Section 551006.
I move that we approve ordinance number 2017-243, retaining a city online message board in accordance with Texas Government Code Section 551.006.
I second. So we have a motion to approve ordinance number 2017-243, brought by Hoffman, seconded by Schnell.
You know, we've been going through this whole multiple times of get rid of it, keep it, get rid of it, keep it. And I used an analogy once, but it's kind of like the drunk driver. You know, you take the car away and you're left with a drunk. Actually, it's a little different. It's kind of like we caught somebody drinking and driving in Shore Acres, so nobody gets to drive. And that's what taking the bulletin board system is kind of like. The citizens don't get the information. It can be a very valuable tool. I'm going to fully agree it has been misused. That may be addressed later. But there are other ways to deal with the misuse than taking the bulletin board system away. The whole issue of the water, I would have loved if you put that ordinance out there so I would have had more time to look at it. Obviously, you didn't come up with the ordinance for the city water on Wednesday. I'm sure it came up, but I wasn't privy to that until the agenda actually came out. That will make the city, I believe, run a little bit more efficiently. Plus, it sends a bad message to citizens for taking away something that's open government. Open government is a good thing, and the more we have of it, the better. Citizens should have a right to here and see what we do. And yes, we need to do it nicely, but we don't always do it nicely, as demonstrated tonight here in City Hall, you know, during a meeting. That doesn't mean we should take away and quit having meetings. I think it's important for us to be able to communicate and allow the citizens to know what our thoughts are. That way you'll be able to contact us if you disagree with us. Just think it's something that's very valuable. And I'll give up the floor right now.
Okay, we're going to start with Jennings.
I'm done with this one.
McCown?
Since I've been on city council, I have yet contacted our city attorney. But if I felt like I needed to, I would definitely like to have the option to make sure I'm on legal grounds. So
we're talking about Baltimore.
Baltimore? Sorry.
7.9.
No, I think the last time that I talked to Alderman Hoskins about it was the fact that I told him that we were the caretakers of the bulletin board. And the last time he brought it up, I voted with him because I said everyone deserves a chance. And so I voted to extend it. It didn't last 60 days, and we messed up again. So the deal saying goes to my kids, time out. Thank you.
Michelle?
I agree with Alderman Hoskins. The only people that are suffering truly are the citizens and transparency and open government. And, you know, if you start slamming doors, it looks like you've got nothing to hide, even if you don't. And even if we wanted to share everything with you folks, now we can't, not legally. And I don't look good in jailhouse orange, burn orange maybe, but not jailhouse. And I mean, you're talking 10 years and 10,000 per person if we screw up with a trauma violation. And that's something that's happening. And the BVF is specifically designed to lift that burden from us and also be able to inform y'all of the day-to-day ongoings and operation. And, I hate to see it go. That's all.
If I want to talk to citizens, I'll talk to y'all. I don't talk to other council members as some may think I do. I don't need the BVS. If I have something, I'm not afraid to talk to anybody in this room, in council, chambers, outside. I make it a point, if I'm out, I stop and say hello. So, I'm done with BBS.
Hoskins?
Let me just point out, folks, that Nextdoor is not compliant with Section 551.006. And, I mean, it's a great tool for you know, the community, but we cannot discuss city business on Nextdoor. It does not comply. So, like I said, and as Alderman Chanel pointed out, this will result in a lot of transparency for the city. And there are good examples already out there that of where the bulletin board was used appropriately. I guess we can vote.
I just want to say that the bulletin board system is for council to discuss without violating TOMA, not for us to discuss with the citizens, that it gives the citizens, you know, they're able to see what we're discussing. If you're discussing city business, the problem with Nextdoor is right now everyone of y'all on council are in violation of TOMA, because every time Alderman Jennings or Alderman Bowles places something that is city business on Nextdoor, it gets emailed to all of council. I've talked to several attorneys that are city attorneys as well as a judge, and those are TOMA violations. Y'all are setting yourself up for failure by discussing city business on Nextdoor. The bulletin board system allows council to discuss without violating TOMA. Three or more, that's the majority vote. They're not allowed to talk.
What about Facebook?
Please don't
disrupt. What about Facebook?
What about Facebook? No, if there's more than three council members on one, I'm not part of the quorum, I'm the mayor, three council members on one group. If you're referring to the Shore Acres group, there's only two council members. But yes, Facebook too. Yep. If you have three council members on one group and they're discussing, it's a TOMA violation. It's a criminal act. It's bad. And right now, the way that we're functioning, we're violating TOMA. We're, you know, being disrespectful to each other.
it's come to where, you know, there's my supporters, there's y'all supporters, and they're, you know, everybody is at odds with each other. We have to start following the law, and the bulletin board system allows us to discuss things without violating TOMA. That's it. Guess we're going to vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those against?
Aye.
And it fails. The nays were Bowles, McCown, and Jennings. The ayes were Schnell and Hopkins. 7.11, consideration and action to approve resolution number 2017-225, concerning Alderman Jennings.
24.
24, 7, 10. Oh, consideration and action to approve oath number 2017-224, rescinding resolution number 2016-195, rescinding resolution number 2016-197, and limiting city alderman, city administrator, and city secretary from consulting with the city attorney except an executive session of council or with permission from the mayor. Do we have a motion?
I make a motion to approve resolution 2017-224, rescinding resolution 2016-195. Rescinding resolution number 2016-197 and limiting city aldermen, city administrator, and city secretary from consulting with the city attorney except in executive session of council or with permission from the mayor.
Do we have a second?
Second.
We have discussion. And start with Alderman Jennings.
Yes, yeah, please start with Jennifer. She has
something
first.
Oh, I'm
sorry. Not against people calling the city attorney. Really not, because none of us up here are attorneys. And I mean, we do need legal advice. It's just the frequency and the blowing of the budget. And there's a lot of times where cooler heads would just prevail, and there's some common sense, or maybe just, I mean, I know that this is a contentious council, and I understand that. We've been doing this for a few years, and it's been like this before, but we've never blown our budget this way. Now we have a problem where, you know, TML has said, we're not even going to answer your questions anymore because we're tired of dealing with you folks. So now we're over a barrel where we're going to have to call the city attorney, which is going to increase the budget overture even further. And maybe it's just a wording, and I can get where that comes from, that's sticking in some people's craw about without permission from the mayor, but the thing is, for example, I mean, we lost PML now, and department heads because of abuse and overuse.
Who's abuse?
Who?
I don't know.
The mayor. I'll say it.
No, it's not the mayor.
Got email chain right here.
You're out of order.
No, somebody asked questions. She didn't know.
No, right. But she has the
floor
and they're the president.
Go ahead.
But I don't know. I wasn't in on that loop. But the thing is that now we are in a position where, you know, department heads, if they need to contact, they have to ask permission for Mr. Stahl. And, I mean, it's just, that's just the chain of command. And I can understand how that would stick in some people's craw, I really do. But we're going to have to do something to curb the expenses with the city attorney, because we're going to be, you know, looking at $200,000 in attorney's fees for the fiscal year if the trend continues. And we budgeted 20. And last year we were at 60 on a budget of 15, and it's been 15 every year prior to that, and we've never blown those numbers before. So that's all I have to say.
Cool. Just to let you know, those emails are attorney-client privilege.
No, they are not.
Yes,
these are public information.
They're not.
They're public information.
Not.
This is from TML to us.
Attorney.
No. Yes. And
yeah,
this is public.
It's not, though.
So, Mayor, it has become clear that our services are no longer a benefit to you and to your city. As such, we will no longer respond to inquiries from you or your city council members or staff.
This does not pertain to
you.
The
should direct any further
you
legal inquiries to your city attorney. You should direct any further legal inquiries to your city attorney.
You have to be removed because you're out of order.
We will continue to respond to inquiries or your city attorney if he wishes to communicate with us. This is relevant to what we are discussing. So.
It's not, though. And
if this is exactly what it is. TML has said that they have to contact, that we have to contact.
Because TML can't give us advice on things that will cause conflict on council, and we're using TML to keep the division going on council. What don't you understand for that? You know, that is not on the agenda. We're discussing access to the attorney.
This is part of it.
This is not part of access to the attorney.
Alderwoman Schnell brought up that we no longer have access to Gmail and that we have to use our city attorney to address them.
That is part of it.
So.
So if you have something to say, there it is.
Our bill is going to go up because we cannot talk as counsel to TML. I've contacted TML three times since I've been here. Now I have to go to the city attorney to talk to TML. I don't know how many other people have talked to TML. But TML has cut us off as city attorney. Our bill is going to go up because we have to talk to Chris Gregg to talk to them. They are a resource for us and we do not have access. And now we want a limit to where we have to have permission to go talk to them. I'm a taxpayer. I represent all the taxpayers in the city. And if I have a question, I'm going to ask it. That's it. That's all I have.
I withdraw my motion and I make a motion to adjourn.
I'll second.
All those in favor?
All right.
Aye. All those against?
Nay.
I have something to say since y'all adjourned. I'll wait till you adjourn.
Okay.
You, Mr. Bowles, I want to talk to you in private.
That's fine. Outside of this, that is fine.
Okay. 7-11.
Moving on to 7-11. Consideration and action to approve resolution number 2017-225. No, we've already done that. 8.0 adjournment. You withdrew your motion.
I did.
Right. 7-11.
Yep, 8.0.
Which you withdrew was your motion.
I went through 7-10, and then I went straight to adjournment. And I'm going to make a motion to postpone 7-11 to the 23rd.
I call a question of personal privilege.
You don't.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can. Read the book. 227 in the book.
You can. What's your question of personal privilege?
So, on the agenda, I'm calling this because I would like to defend my name. I've been called into question about my actions in city council. It's now public information. It's out there. I cannot defend it. I want to defend it right now. And I do have that privilege and that right.
It's not on the agenda.
It is on the agenda. That is correct. And I can call a question of personal privilege in order to defend this. You don't have to have a motion for question of personal privilege.
That's fine. We adjourn at 8:22.
Hey, Mr. Bowles,
I'd like to talk to you.
We're not adjourned
yet. We are not adjourned.
Please, still have a quorum. Mr. Stahl, do we have a quorum?
Yes, we have a quorum.
Would you please call the roll?
Yes, please. Mayor Sanford.
Note for the record that Mayor Sanford has exited at 8:23 p.m.
Alderman Hoskins.
Note for the record that Alderman Hoskins has exited at 8:23 p.m.
Alderman Bowles.
Present.
Alderwoman Schnell.
Note for the record that Alderwoman Schnell has exited at 8:23 p.m.
Alderman McCowan.
Present.
Mayor Pro Tem Jennings.
Present.
We have a quorum.
All right. Currently on the floor, we never got to 7.11. Regardless of the alderman and woman that left and the mayor that left. So item 7.11, we don't have a motion. Do I hear a motion for 7.11? No motion.
No motion.
Mr. Bowles has requested a personal privilege speech. We will grant that. Item 7-11 fails for lack of a motion. Alderman Bowles has the floor for an item of personal privilege.
I'll save it until the next meeting. I want to make sure the mayor and all council certainly get it. So.
All right. The meeting is adjourned as of 8:24 p.m.